You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Raining Jays. I am your host, Samuel Jamison Packard III, a.k.a. Ladies Love Cool Jam, a.k.a. Young Baby Jamwich. And I am joined today by Chris Joseph Grenham of Nesson.com, formerly of Celtics Blog, to talk about the Celtics Game 2 atrocious loss to the Milwaukee Bucks. The Celtics fall 123-102. And this game really was over after the third quarter, where the Celtics had pretty much one of the worst 7-minute stretches all season, which is impressive. This is their first loss of the playoffs. This is not something that the Celtics are used to in the playoffs. But at one point in this game, with 7 minutes left, the Celtics were down 69-71. And they scored 2 points the remaining 7 minutes of that quarter. It was bad news bears. And so, Chris, what the hell happened out there?
Bad news bears is like the perfect term for this. What was it, a 22-2 run, 24-2? It was something along those lines. It was so bad. They reverted back to a lot of their like November Celtics tendencies. The spacing on the floor was as bad as it's been in a long time. There's a lot of iso ball, a lot of turnovers along the perimeter. It was just really, really ugly. The Bucks kind of shifted their defense just up towards the perimeter a little bit. They pressured the Celtics a little higher up, and it just totally put the Celtics' brain into pretzel. It was so, so ugly. But it's good. I mean, I think a lot of people following the Celtics, myself included, I think we're maybe getting a little ahead of themselves. I was thinking this morning, you know, say they steal game two, the series is probably over. I don't know. So it was, you know, brought the Celtics right back down to earth. It was really bad.
It was atrocious. And you got to give the Bucks credit and Budenholzer credit for making an adjustment. We did not see nearly the same like pick and pop. They did a lot of more switching 1-5. Yep. And the Celtics just really didn't know how to handle it. You know who really didn't know how to handle it was Kyrie Irving, who had his worst playoff game in the history of time. He finished with 4 of 18, only 9 points. It says he has 3 turnovers, but that feels like a low number. He just was bad throughout the entire game and never really got it going. And it felt like he didn't get it going for scoring wise or setting other people up. But like, we go through this stretch here for the final quarter. I'm just going to read off the play by play.
It's Jaylen ugly.
Jaylen Brown missed 3. Kyrie Irving missed 3. Gordon Hayward missed 3. Al Horford turnover. Gordon Hayward turnover. Marcus Morris turnover. Kyrie misses a shot. Kyrie turnover. Terry Rozier turnover. Jason Tatum miss. Then we finally get an Aaron Baines tip in. We finally get some points. Gordon Hayward miss. Rozier miss. Jaylen Brown miss. 2 more turnovers. And then all just like that, the Celtics are down 73-98.
And like all those misses were bad. A lot of those were bad shots. Like the shot selection was horrible.
Yeah, it was early threes in the shot clock. Yeah. And they were actually like a lot of the commentary at halftime was, oh man, the Celtics are pretty lucky to be only down 4, or I think they were down 4 or 5 at this point. Because the Bucks really came out and played a much better game, but the Celtics were playing scrappy. Al Horford and Marcus Morris were really the only guys doing anything for them offensively. And it's just like the mid-range shots that were not that were like pretty much dropping for everyone in game one. Just they didn't seem to be there with the Bucks defense of changing game plan. And the Celtics need to find something to do to adjust, because at this point it was just extremely ugly. But that being said, like what are you going to do when Kyrie Irving, your best player, shoots 4 for 18? Like, you just don't expect that to happen moving forward.
Yeah, he goes 4 for 18. I mean, Tatum was 2 for 10. But like you pointed out, it was a little different. The Bucks weren't dropping as much as they were in game one. I mean, they still were here and there, but when they were, Celtics mid-range game and jumpers that they were falling everywhere in game one just wasn't happening. So they're going to have to make a lot of adjustments. But Tatum's got to get going. I mean, he was flat, and I think he had 4 points in game one. He had a 5 tonight. He was minus 18. So you got to get him more involved. Gordon Hayward, who was really clicking in the Pacers series, he was only 1 for 5, another quiet night. He was minus 35 points. So it was pretty ugly. I mean, saying to get those guys involved is obviously an easy solution. There's plenty of other adjustments they're going to have to make when Milwaukee keeps throwing these defensive shifts at them. But like you said, Kyrie Irving, 4 for 18, that's not going to happen a ton. So that was obviously the leading factor here.
They need to do a better job of attacking mismatches. Now, it's something they did early, and they're actually able, with Jaylen Brown attacking Mirotic, and actually making foul shots, which was shocking. He started the game 5 for 5. He was 6 of 7 tonight from the line and actually had a pretty decent game. But Tatum
tried.
It was one bright spot. We also got some Time Lord Yabu minutes for the other bright spot.
Hey, man, they led the team in plus minus. They were both plus 8. Team best. I mean, that was – I'm pretty sure Chris Webber called Gershon agile at one point. So that's a win in my
mind. Well, Marv Albert also said that Yabu was 260 pounds. So people were lying all over the place.
Yeah, he said – and then he said Robert Williams was a second-round pick. It was kind of a disaster once those guys checked in.
That's par for course for Webber, yes, and Marv Albert. But
very much.
In terms of if the Bucks are going to switch 1 through 5, they need to do a better job of attacking the mismatch. There was some times where Horford was able to post up Ilyasova. That was somewhat effective. But other than that, the Celtics really didn't do great against the Bucks wings. Like, if they're going to put Mirotic out there, or if they're going to switch Brook Lopez, some combination of Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Gordon Hayward, these very athletic wings that the Celtics have, the ultimate strength of their roster, needs to be to do something more than kind of either settling for post-ups, which is Jason Tatum's is not great at this point. They just need to attack more and get into the paint. And you're right, Hayward did not do much tonight. I thought Jaylen was okay at it. But then Tatum, I don't know what's going on with Tatum in Milwaukee, but he's been basically a ghost for these first two games.
Yeah, basically. But you're right. I mean, Mirotic specifically on those switches, you're talking about attacking mismatches and attacking switches. Mirotic is a guy that you've got to target that with. I mean, when he got traded over the Bucks, that was something that a lot of Celtics writers and a lot of Celtics fans mentioned right when he got traded. It was like, all right, well, that's advantage Celtics, because when he comes in terms of the Celtics spacing and what the Celtics have on the wings, that kind of leans towards the Celtics, right? So they should be targeting him off certain switches. And when they get those mismatches, they were not doing that tonight. They just weren't really attacking like they were in game one. And I mean, a lot of that's credit to the Bucks. Like you said, Coach Bud made a lot of good adjustments. Giannis was much better tonight. He was a little more in control. And obviously, Chris Middleton, known Celtics killer. I think he was like 900 for 1,000 on threes tonight. It was really impressive. He's an
assassin. He's absolutely insane. He scored 28 points tonight, 10 of 18, 7 of 10 from deep. The Bucks really bounced back. They played a lot better game on the offensive end, just in terms of both their half court and their transition defense. And that's the thing with the Celtics is, like, when they're missing all those shots, their ability to limit Giannis in transition really, and just the whole team in general, it's so much more difficult because they just don't get a chance to set their defense. I thought Eric Bledsoe did a fantastic job tonight of penetrating the defense and then finding shooters. But yeah, he finished with 5 assists. It was his best game, best game of the series, but there's only been 2. But he's finished with 21 points, 5 assists. He was 3 of 5 from deep. The Bucks just did much better pretty much on all facets of the game, but especially just getting out in transition, because then they just weren't able to slow down Giannis.
And I mean, what you said also is spot on. It's like their defensive adjustments obviously created those offensive opportunities, because when they're out in transition, they're a really athletic team. Their spacing is so much better when they're running, and their pace is much quicker. Celtics were able to, because they were hitting everything, were able to slow them down in game one, and their half court defense just completely threw the Bucks out of whack. So they weren't able to get set in that defensive half court, and the Bucks were much better in transition.
All right, we're going to take a break and come back, and hopefully we'll talk a little bit more about how the Celtics defended Giannis Antetokounmpo. Really was surprised I was able to pronounce his last name there. We'll also try to figure out if there are any positives the Celtics can pull out of this game. And before that, and in the final segment, we'll get to your tweets. I'm sure people will be pulling their hair out tonight. And then the junk drawer, which is mighty full, because what else are we going to talk about? That's when we come back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. And we're back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast, discussing the Celtics, a horrendous 123-102 loss to the Milwaukee Bucks in Game 2. And one of the big stories of Game 1 was how well the Celtics defended Giannis, especially with Al Horford. Giannis had one of his worst games, and it felt like he bounced back tonight. He scored 29 points, was 13 of 18 from the line. 7-6. I still thought the Celtics did a pretty good job of limiting Giannis. He really made a lot of his buckets getting to the free throw line. We can talk about the whistle, which was just bad. I thought it was ticky-tacky for both teams. A lot of free throws in this game. But I thought the Celtics did a decent job of slowing down Giannis. Giannis was just a little bit more aggressive, and it's something we talked about last second, but he was allowed to get just so much more momentum and got downhill so much easier just because the Bucks were playing in transition. But with that being said, I still think the Celtics did a decent job of slowing him down.
Yeah, I mean, when they were able to limit the transition or maybe get a bucket, so they were coming down into a half-court set, I thought they were pretty good on switches, especially early on. They were pushing like these swift switches and pressuring him along the perimeter, kind of similar to what they did in Game 1, where they did it a lot in transition to Game 1, but they would almost set that wall high up on the perimeter and make things difficult for him, so he couldn't really get that full head of steam, which is where everyone knows he really succeeds. Him and Bledsoe ran a couple more pick and rolls today, which they didn't really do a lot of in Game 1, but I still thought the Celtics were relatively good. I mean, Rozier had a couple good switches in the first quarter, but I mean, it's tough to say when he goes for, I don't know what he finished with, 29, I think. Yeah, 29. So it's tough to say they were still good, but I agree. When they kept him within a half-court set, which was rare tonight, I thought they were relatively good. They were forcing Giannis or Bledsoe to make a pocket pass here or two when it came out of a pick and roll, but geez, it's really hard to stop him when he's got a full head of steam in transition.
I was actually surprised the Bucks like haven't gone to using Giannis as the screener more often, because I think that's like one of the more effective ways to get him in space. Definitely. And I think actually the Middleton being such a kind of deadly shooter tonight had a big impact on that pick and roll, because it means that guy in the weak side corner really has to stick towards Middleton and can't help out, and Giannis can get a lot more space. But yeah, I agree with you. I thought they did a good job. Baines, like, he wasn't, if you look at his, he was a minus 19, so not great. Oh my God, I just saw Gordon Hayward's minus 30
minus
number.
Minus 30 is a, yeah, that's tough. That's an eyesore.
That's tough.
Baines was good, though. Baines was good against Giannis. There was a couple times he got called for fouls where I think it was a bad call underneath, but he does such a good job of sealing off the paint, and he did that well. Obviously, it's tough because they got smoked, but I still thought he was relatively good, especially in the half court.
And when he does foul, he makes sure to try and like really make Giannis feel it, which is what you got to do in the playoffs.
Yeah, big time.
I mean, just like Al Horford in the first half, he was like a plus 12 in his 17 minutes. And so like there was really, they were doing a good job of kind of like using that Al Horford minutes. But in the half court, I thought they did a decent job. The Bucks were also doing a thing where the Celtics were switching Mook and Al Horford. So they're basically really targeting Marcus Morris. And you can't really like blame Marcus Morris for like, that's just not, the Celtics have really succeeded in building that wall and like putting a big body in front of him. That's just like not Mook's game. And like, you can't blame him for kind of giving up points there. I think he was actually the best Celtics player in this game. Mook finished with, if we're going to focus on any positives to take out of this game, playoff Mook might be back. He was 6 of 8 from the field, 3 of 4 from deep, and finished with 17 points. If he doesn't do that, this game is a blowout starting in like the second quarter.
It's even closer, yeah. And I was looking at playoff plus minuses per 48 earlier today. He led the team heading in today. This game is not going to do anything good for anyone's plus minus, but he was 17.8, which was a team high for plus minus per 48. Terry Rozier was right behind him, 17.6. So yeah, playoff Mook could be back. I mean, he kept him in it for a little while. Of course, it couldn't do much down the stretch, but he was solid. That's a good takeaway. They definitely were targeting him at times on the defensive side, but I thought he was pretty good. He was efficient. I mean, this is a last couple games we've seen a Marcus Morris that we haven't seen since November or so. So I think it's huge to have him back, especially if Tatum and Hayward are going to stay at this stagnant pace. And obviously if Kyrie Irving is going to have a 4-for-18 game, you're going to need someone else contributing.
I mean, they need someone to be able to knock down threes like that. It, like they, the Celtics actually were basically league average, like 35%, 10 for 28 tonight. But even without that terrible offensive stretch, it's still hard to win a game when the Bucks shoot 20 of 47. They attempted 47 threes tonight, which is
threes.
Absolutely insane. And they hit 42% of them. It's really going to be tough. Like, even if the Celtics didn't completely shit the bed, they still gave up 39 points there in the third quarter. And so now it is tied 1-1, moving to game three on Friday night. I mean, if you look at it in you think if the Celtics, my plan for the Celtics winning was Celtics in six, and they had to steal one of the first two. They're coming back tied 1-1.
Check that box, yeah.
It's a five-game series now when the Celtics have home court advantage. They should be feeling pretty good, but it's tough when the best things about the Pacers series were that the Celtics never at any point looked like the regular season Celtics.
Right.
And they bounced back to adversity. I actually thought they did a good job in the first half. The Bucks came out, went on a 10-2 run, and the Celtics immediately responded with a 10-2 run of their own. It was basically all started with Kyrie. I thought this was a sign that they had turned the corner. But now it's just that third quarter came. And so, but they're still in pretty good position. So what do you expect from the Celtics on Friday night? Are we going to get more of the same of a general inconsistency, or is it going to be a kind of the garden's going to be rocking and the offense isn't going to be terrible?
Well, I think the garden will definitely be rocking. It's an 8 o'clock start, so you get a little more time at the bar for people. And generally those late starts provide a louder garden, which is always nice. But I think you're right. I mean, if I were to have told you on Friday that the Celtics were coming back to Boston 1-1, you'd be like, yeah, that's great. Let's do it, because that's gold. You steal one in Milwaukee. But coming off of this game two, it's kind of tough just because of the fashion they lost it in. Obviously, they didn't look like this in any of the Pacers series. We haven't seen a run like that third quarter against the Celtics in quite a long time. But I think they'll respond well. I trust Brad Stevens to make the proper adjustments. I mean, both teams have gotten a feel for one another's A game. I mean, the Celtics gave it to them in game one, and the Bucks gave it to them in game two. So I think from here on out, we'll be relatively neck and neck. I don't think we'll see many more blowouts like this, but who knows? I mean, these are two coaches who have made a lot of money off of adjusting and kind of taking blows and giving them back. So I think we'll be close games from here on out. I don't think we'll see many blowouts.
Well, just imagine if we get both teams playing well at the same time.
It'd be amazing.
We'll have a playoff series.
It'll be an actual playoff series, which we haven't really seen yet, because the Pacers series didn't feel like the playoffs. It was just, there wasn't really a lot of fire to it. It was just kind of flat. So yeah, if we could get a playoff game coming here soon, that'd be pretty great.
Yeah, I think the most important adjustment that the Celtics can make is if the Bucks are going to be switching 1 through 5, they got to figure out a way to attack. We talked about attacking the mismatches. I think they also got to do something better with the just either running more Kyrie and Al pick and rolls, because if they're going to switch Brooke Lopez onto Kyrie Irving, the Celtics really need to figure a way to attack. And Kyrie, you expect Kyrie to do better than that. I think the Bucks did a really good job of, once Kyrie beat the initial defender, just making a wall, and he didn't really punish that. But we'll see how they adjust. Moving forward, I do expect there to be a much closer series. The Celtics traditionally, at least in last year's playoffs, played much better at home. And basically did not lose a game at home last year until the Eastern Conference Finals, where they missed about 45 three-pointers. But you expect role players generally to play better at home and to knock down shots. So I expect a better performance. Before we get to the fine folks' tweets and the drunk drawer, are there any other positives that the Celtics can take out of this horrendous game two?
Well, I think in terms of adjustments, you're just talking about what adjustments you think they should make. They weren't as great in terms of pick and roll defense on the weak side tonight. I thought they did a really good job of kind of protecting the weak side on the defensive end, and they didn't do that tonight. They kind of they kind of ended up chasing as help rather than just watching the weak side or protecting the weak side from the get-go. So I think that could be perfected right off the bat. But we already mentioned it, in my opinion. The positive you could take is Mook here, because if you have Kyrie having a normal Kyrie game where he's actually clicking, maybe a little more involved, Jason Tatum, potentially Gordon Hayward, and you have Marcus Morris doing what he's doing, that's a golden recipe, in my opinion. So I think if Marcus Morris continues playing like he is, that's gold. So I think that's the big time positive that you can take from game two.
Yeah, the only other positive I'm going to suggest is that, well, Horford's still pretty good. He knocked down 15 points, 6 of 10, 3 of 5 from deep. He's got to cut down on the 5 turnovers. There was that one wild play where Mirotić just slapped him in the bicep and got a turnover.
Yeah.
Absolutely absurd.
That was bizarre.
Yeah, it was kind of like shitty officiating for the entire first half, and then they just kind of backed off after the game got ridiculous. But well, I'm sure there'll be plenty of complaints about that in the Rainy Jays hashtag and the Rainy Junk hashtag. So we'll get to that after this break here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Welcome back. As always, after every game, we read your tweets, you fine listener gods, as Jay King calls you. If you want to talk about some serious hoops, use the hashtag RainandJays. If you want to talk about some serious nonsense, use the hashtag RainandJunk. We'll start out with Dalton Dunford. Why didn't Brad call a timeout during the run in the third when C's missed or turned the ball over on 16 straight possessions?
The Very ultimate frustrated. Brad Stevens timeout question. Yes.
People love to talk about Brad's timeouts. I'm pretty sure he did call a timeout. Let me check my notes. There were definitely stoppages in play. He called a timeout, I'm pretty sure, after they went up 10, 81, 71.
Yeah, it was in the early run he did call a timeout.
Like, there's not much, like, that's just like it's become a cliche at this point for, like, to bring up the Brad Stevens timeout. I thought he actually was pretty quick on the timeout, earlier in the first half. He's stopping
quicker
it
than
on,
he normally is. I mean, I thought he was in the Pacers series and in game one, too. He's been quicker on the trigger. I think he's reading the tweets.
I definitely think. I think that Brad Stevens reads the comment section. this is from at AG Freeman. Is it a rule that when Kyrie is shitting the bed, everyone has to shit the bed? Well, Kyrie is kind of the straw who stirs the drink. He's the point guard. He sets everyone up. Like, so if he's having a bad game, it's more than likely that everyone else is going to have
a trickle-down effect. That's the way it works.
Yeah, I'm like, maybe you'd like Gordon Hayward to step – like, ideally, you'd have Gordon Hayward, Mr. All-Star, to step up and kind of, like, be the number one guy and facilitate. He clearly didn't do that tonight, but I don't know. If Kyrie's going to shoot 4 for 18 – against the number one team in the league, like, it, you're pretty much screwed.
Yeah, especially if Tatum's going 2 for 10.
We already mentioned this. It's from at James Beard, Beard Jam. Yabu got more points than Tatum tonight. Jason really had a bad time in Milwaukee. He's got to do something more. But, I mean, shouts to Yabu for being fantastic.
Yabu, again, agile, and he weighs 260 pounds. Yes. I mean, these are all big key factors going forward in this series.
This is from Prof Chop. When Time Lord is in the game, it's either really good or really bad for the Celtics tonight. It's really bad. He is the human victory cigar or human surrender flag.
Yep, exactly. And I mean, hey, he got some time. I mean, once again, he got mentioned as a second round pick by Marv Albert, and he was +8. That was great. Getting a little action. I mean, if you could get 9 minutes out of Robert Williams, get it done. I was fine with that. A little national exposure.
Speaking of the announcers, this is from at Live Green or Die. I don't want to listen to another second of Chris Webber. That's more of a Rainy Junk, but I agree. They're both very bad.
That's totally fair. And it's tough with some of these national games. That I mean, obviously, it's not easy because you got to cover all the teams. But it's so evident that they've only watched like a handful of games from each team. It's brutal. You just hear them talking about Irving and Jaylen Brown and stuff. It's like, just do a little research before the game. A little bit of research, because Tatum hasn't scored 30 points a game in the last 3 weeks.
The thing that's the worst about Marv Albert is it feels like he's blind. Like, he's constantly saying the wrong person's name, or just like saying the wrong thing that happened.
you know when like you were younger and you were playing NBA Live and the announcer was like delayed? So you're on the next possession, but the announcer is still talking about the possession before. That's what Marv Albert's like. He's just permanently delayed and saying the wrong person's name. It's horrendous.
That reminds me of I used to play sports Joe Montana Sports Talk Football on the Sega Genesis. Yeah. And like you could somehow there's some glitch in the game where you could get the commentator to go and a handoff to the nose tackle. Oops, what a mistake.
See, I wouldn't be surprised if Marv Albert yelled that exact line during the third quarter run.
My question is, in early Sega Genesis game programming, why did they program the phrase handoff to the nose tackle?
Who decided that should be included? Yeah, I don't know. That's I want that guy's job, though.
I think that's the perfect transition into the reigning junk. Before, well, there's a bunch of comments about the referees, Tony brothers, things like that. But we already talked about that. I will say Giannis got away with one very egregious travel today.
Yeah.
That one was absolutely absurd. He hopped on his right foot twice and then took a step with his left foot. He gets away with
a lot of travels, man. Yeah. And I don't like to be that guy who's always saying, you know, James Harden gets away with this or Giannis gets away with this. But it's pretty egregious at times. Like it's wild. And I'm sure at times like he has such long strides. So maybe at regular speed, it's tough to tell. And sometimes that can be a little deceiving, but he gets away with a ton of travels.
You know, it's ridiculous. But I mean, he looks like a gazelle out there and people are just so mesmerized, but they can't call it. I just want to shout out Joey Angus right now, who said Tony Brothers is undefeated. Anyone who repeats the jokes I use on Twitter is automatically going to get a shout out.
Automatic shout out. That's good.
This is from Greg Casoli. Anyone who tells you Mike Budenholzer doesn't look like young Horace Slughorn is someone you don't need in your life.
That's good.
That's a really good observation.
That's a very good one.
I've been saying Mike Budenholzer looks like a large adult baby, but
I think it might be at the Pelicans game with the baby mascot, the giant.
Oh yeah, young baby Smoothie King. What's his name?
Yeah,
oh.
that's Mike Budenholzer. That's him.
That is dead on.
When you tweeted it, and I thought of baby, I was like, wow, that's pretty accurate. And then I thought of the mascot, I was like, holy shit, like that's him. It's pretty incredible.
All right, this is from at Chris Volkernick. We expected a split from the get-go. We good, hashtag rain junk, but it's classic dog drinking coffee and fire meme. So that's been the reaction of Celtics Twitter tonight. They are a little bit upset.
That's fair. But again, think positive. If I had told you a week ago that Celtics were coming back to TD Garden 1-1, you'd be fine with that. It's just the nature of how this game 2 went, which I totally understand.
This is from at Tony Fox. Tim Frazier looks like the Smacks Frog. That's been another one of my observations. It's spot on. Anyone who doesn't know Smacks the cereal, which I don't think I've seen on shelves in years, has a wonderful frog on it.
That's what matters.
It looks exactly like Tim Frazier, who got some burn tonight. Actually, Tim Frazier, the first time I actually interviewed anyone in the locker room was at a Red Claws game, and it was Tim Frazier. So I always have a soft spot in my heart for
Awesome. He had a retro Bucks hoodie that he wore into either a game against the Pistons in round one or game one against the Celtics. It was pretty great. So he's got some solid attire, pregame attire, but that's pretty cool. He was your first interview. I didn't know that.
This is from Alex, who's at Straight No Chaser. That's a rough halftime show from Biz Markie, Raining Junk. I did not get to see it. All I saw was the tweets from the Celtics beat reporters. Who seemed to be a fan of the Biz Markie performance compared to the Mace performance at Madison Square Garden earlier this year.
Yeah.
It sounded like it was pretty good. Only one song. I respect it. Biz Markie to do.
Yeah. Josue Pavone had a selfie with him. I caught that too afterward. He was, again, they were relatively pleased with the performance. And then I saw a selfie with Josue. So it sounded like they were relatively pleased. I mean, it could have gone worse. Like Ja Rule's performance in Milwaukee was a disaster.
Oh yeah.
So it's much better than that. They're improving.
And then finally, I had to do this. This is a tweet from Adam Himmelsbach. My man's half-court shot barely reached the free throw line, and the announcers are asking the fans not to boo, but I don't think they're booing enough. I'm all for criticism at halftime performances or mid-game performances, especially when someone really can't shoot a basketball. And so I respect the Boston Globe for doing the thorough reporting on the mid-game entertainment when I can't do it.
Let them know. Good work, Himmelsbach, picking up for Jam Slack.
All right, Chris. Last time you're on the pod, you and John did not do a junk drawer. So I was wondering, do you have any junk for your debut junk drawer performance?
All right. Well, this is a tweet. It's not necessarily junk, but this is one of my favorite tweets of the night. It was from Max Letterman. And he tweeted after the – well, towards the end of the game that Gershon Yabusele had seven more career postseason points than Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, so combined. So if you're going to use this loss for anything, a little Lakers slander is probably worthwhile. So I thought that was a perfect tweet to kind of encapsulate this. What's a guy like you grab for junk out of a loss like this? Because I think you've got to have some pretty good material, right?
Oh, that was an excellent pivot right there, away from the fact that you got nothing, Grenham.
what am I? I was obsessed with the fact that Bruce Pearl was sitting courtside, and he was yelling at the refs every time they showed him. So that was
a big Bucks fan?
No, not at all. He's a big fan of paying college basketball players envelopes of cash. That's what he's a big fan of. So, but the fact that he was on the sideline screaming at the refs was without question my favorite part of tonight.
That's fantastic. He's just a big fan of yelling.
Just a big fan of yelling at officials. Yeah.
All right. For my personal junk drawer, I was very startled that the game started at 8:02. I thought it was going to be a classic TNT 8:17, and I was shocked when they went immediately to the game. It was.
I wonder if that has something to do with their priority of Rockets Warriors afterwards. They got to get people right over there, so maybe that was part of it.
Maybe, but they usually have two games on like a Thursday night, and they do all that nonsense.
You're right, because normally TNT, you're guaranteed 8:20, 8:15, 8:20, you're guaranteed in that slot.
So I just wasn't prepared for that type of stuff. More Chris Webber critique. He called Mook the heart and soul of the team and said he's Mr. Consistency.
That's the second national broadcast in a row where they've said he's the most consistent Celtic.
Brad Stevens says it just to like lie to Mook to try to get him to be more
Brad
consistent.
Brad Stevens said it at like a national game in November or October, and they just ran with it. They're like, oh yeah, he's still consistent. Great for him. He totally had a great February and March. That's totally what happened.
Speaking of Brad, I don't know if anyone else noticed this or I'm just like wishful thinking, but it felt like he had put on an extra deep voice during his first quarter interview.
Yeah, I noticed that.
What was going on with that? Is that the audio level or was Brad
trying to show out for national playoffs? Yeah, I have no idea if he saw one of his interviews and got a little self-conscious or something, but I noticed that too. I'm glad you brought that up. That was really bizarre.
It was very weird, and I really loved the idea of Brad like in the mirror practicing his deep voice for Christian Ledlow.
Yeah, I enjoy that image very much, very much.
All right, Jason Tatum, despite the struggles, had some nice ass sideburns going. Tatum sideburns are back. He's out here looking like a young Ambrose Burnside. I thought that was fantastic.
I was also if we're talking about appearances and stuff, I was a big fan of Dante DiVincenzo's look behind the bench. I don't think he moved the entire game. Like when they would show a huddle, when they would show a play, he was always just sitting with his hands in his pockets. He looked like a statue, but he had a great, you know, a long sleeve with a sport coat over it. I thought that was a pretty good look.
That's always a strong look. You look like the crackhead from Chappelle's Show anytime you wear a hoodie with a blazer.
Yeah, it was exactly. There was some strong bench play. I mean, also this is something I forgot from my junk drawer. I think it was the first quarter. They swung the ball to Giannis on the wing, and he took a three. That was just a brutal air ball. And right when the ball clearly didn't hit the rim, Yabu and Tice shot up from the bench and immediately back to the other side, and Tice just threw his hands up in the air. So that was also a great reaction before the game got out of hand.
See, now you're getting the hang of it. It's all just nonsense observations like that.
I just need to click my thoughts here. I'm a little rattled with that third quarter.
I told you to take notes before the game.
I'm looking at my notes right now, but they're actually really, really depressing numbers. I no joke have a note here that says, well, it's a little expletive, so I won't. But Bucks.
No, go for it.
Can I swear at all? I can swear at all.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. All right. So my last note I took: Bucks defense fucking Celtics. That's I wrote in the middle of the third quarter. So that's where my head was at.
Yeah, my notes completely trailed off in the third quarter as I was disgusted. To wrap it on up, Jaylen Brown had a nice random like 360-degree spin move that looked like he was going for a dunk. That was just like complete nonsense, which I am here for.
That was, and it was on. He loves driving against Giannis. I think he's the only guy in the league that loves going at Giannis in the lane. That was a really nice move.
It's like he sees Baines underneath the hoop. It's kind of insane.
Yeah, that's his target. It's kind of wild. Also, Baines, the way Baines was looking at the officials after some of the foul calls that he had underneath was pretty awesome. It was like he was smiling sarcastically, but his mouth was just open. And it was kind of like, it was almost like a mascot face where you just, they have a big smile, but there's just that black space in between their teeth because they're supposed to be like yelling. That's what Baines was doing. He was just staring with his jaw on the ground. It was kind of awesome.
That is sweet. I just have one final rant. It's got nothing to do with the game. But this happened to me today I was flying down to Tallahassee, Florida for work, sitting in Delta Comfort Plus because I'm a gold medallion member and
I got
that upgrade. And listen to this. The flight attendant in the Delta Comfort Plus area went around and individually thanked every single person by name who had some sort of status, starting with platinum medallion members, then gold medallion members, then silver medallions. Like, thank them for being whatever status they were.
What?
It was a really weird thing, and I was not okay with it, but I thought, I'm going to get a thank you for being gold. I am going to get something. I'm going to get finally the recognition I deserve. And then, boom, completely ignored.
She had no time. She had zero time. That's like uncomfortable going around thanking everyone. That's bizarre.
It was very awkward. People had to like take off their headphones. She'd be like, Mr. Morris. And then they took off their headphones. He was just like, thank you for being a gold medallion member. And there's like, I guess, thank you.
Some poor guy's sleeping. She grabs his shoulder, starts shaking it. Hey, thanks. Thank you for being a gold platinum member. I appreciate
she
it.
She literally thanked the silver medallion person sitting next to me. It was a slap in the face to
she
the entire.
She probably looked right at you and just scoffed and walked away. That's tough.
It was a sick joke. And it's probably because I was like, had my elbow hanging out and she knocked it a few times with a drink cart and she was not pleased with me, but
she wasn't happy with you. That should have been a sign for game two.
I should have known then.
Should have known when you got ignored by a stewardess that it's just bad news.
I didn't complain to Delta directly. I just that was the next best thing is that I immediately went to Twitter to complain about it. But then I saw the guy next to me looking at my screen and I was like, got real embarrassed because that's an absurd thing to complain about in tweeting. And so I had to
about not being thanked by the flight attendant.
Yeah.
That would be perfect.
Well, it was in all caps. Like I was Jay Crowder. And then I had to surreptitiously.
We should start tweeting like Jay Crowder permanently, just only caps, no matter what we're tweeting about.
Anytime Al Horford makes a three, it pretty much sends me into Jay Crowder mode. But
sure, Jay Crowder mode, yeah. Pure Jay Crowder mode, except it's all about chocolate milk. It's even better. Also,
that was one thing. National TV chocolate milk ad.
They did. They threw a chocolate milk ad out there with Horford running under the bridge. It was perfect. Yeah, I was surprised. I didn't realize it until the commercial was over that I wasn't on NBC Sports Boston. So that was a nice surprise.
Big moment.
So we also got a lot. Speaking of airport tweets and flying tweets real quick, we got a lot of action before game one because of the snow with all the beat writers going out there.
Oh, there yeah. Classic.
A lot of fear, but I thoroughly enjoy airport tweets when it comes to people flying for the job. So that was great to have a winter storm warning right before and see the pure panic. I appreciated that.
That's peak sports writer Twitter. That's fantastic stuff.
Yeah. Peak sports writer, in my opinion, is when a flight gets canceled or they're having trouble changing flights. So they're not going to make like shoot around or something. And they just lose it on the airline on Twitter. That's the greatest thing in the world.
See, I really should have lost it on Delta for not thanking me for being a gold medallion member.
Name the flight attendant by name in the tweet. It would have been perfect.
What is your badge number, Miss? What is your badge?
Would have been awesome.
All right. I think that is perfect. We went our longest segment by a mile was the junk drawer. That's how it's supposed to be after a horrendous loss. Chris Grenham from Nesson.com. Thank you for joining me. Folks, if you're a fan of the podcast, please subscribe, rate us, give us 5 stars. You know the trick. You can listen to us on places where you listen to podcasts. You figured it out the first time. Keep on doing it. Come back for more. Tune in. We'll tomorrow's episode, we'll get John and Jay's take, who are both at the game. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packett, and Jay King. Locked On Celtics.